District's issue committee meeting to order. Today is August 15th and it's 12 noon. Let's have a roll call, please.
They're muted, Roger. I can't hear
Oh,
anything.
C2 is muted.
Dennis, you left me for
Okay.
Dan.
Yeah, I got a
Well,
better
let's start
offer.
again. Let's try again.
Okay.
It's a free
Roll
lunch.
call. Roll call, Director Yeo.
Present.
Director Nguyen. Director Mezqua.
Present.
Director Meeks. Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Bilodeau.
Here.
Director Sheldon. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Green, you do have a quorum of your committee.
Okay, thank you. Mr. General Manager, is there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay, thank you. We have visitor participation. Anyone wishing to come in to the board of directors on any items not listed on the agenda, but within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district? Or anyone wishing to comment on the consent calendar items? Okay, I'm hearing and seeing none. Let's go to the consent calendar, which consists of items 1 through 7.
You bet.
Anyone wishing to pull any items?
I will
If
move
not,
to approve the. Can I make a motion or I cannot because I'm an alternate?
I think it's me, Director Mesqua, Bruce.
I would make the motion.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Wiegand? Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay, thank you. So let's go to item number 8, matters for consideration, actuarial valuation of the retiree medical insurance benefit plan. John?
Yeah, go ahead, Randy. You want to go to the next item?
Let's, yes. Yes, you should be logging in a second.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, can we go to the next item? We're still waiting for an individual to log into the meeting.
Okay, we'll do that. Item number 9. Let's see. I'm so bad at doing this. Give me one sec. Okay, so we have item number 9 is the proposed audiovisual replacements of the to the boardroom C2, C3 conference rooms. That's Bruce, right?
Yes, good afternoon, committee. I'm here again to discuss the proposed audiovisual replacements for the boardroom, the C2 and C3 conference rooms. The committee will recall I was here 2 months ago to discuss some of the changes we've been working with the audiovisual consultant. The consultant had completed the phase one of their task. That was a needs assessment. Now they've completed, well, they haven't completed yet, but we're in phase two, which is bill of material and design alternatives. So they've provided now to staff a bill of materials, which lists the type of equipment we'd be looking at installing in the boardroom, replacing the outdated, obsolete equipment that's in there. Audiovisual equipment, and same with the C2 and C3 conference rooms. We did ask for some design alternatives, and they provided three different video screen alternatives for the boardroom. I had previously discussed what's called a direct view LED screen. A direct view LED screen is a video wall similar to the video wall we have in the boardroom right now. However, to the viewing audience, it appears as one big screen without any lines or what they call bezels, distracting the viewer. That was one of the biggest complaints that staff had received in the past by some of our board members, as well as MoDOC board members, is there a way to get rid of the lines on the screen? So that's been a key component of the design, redesign of that room. So Waves is the consultant. They provided an option for direct view LED video wall. They also provided an option for a video wall similar to what we have in there today. So that has bezels and lines, which wasn't really a design. We didn't really want that in the design, but it was a good alternative to provide. They also provided an alternative with a projector that would be mounted on the ceiling, and it would display on a screen that would come down from the ceiling, just like we used to have maybe 25 years ago here at the district, which is an alternative design as well. For the C2 and C3 conference rooms, I did go over that before with the committee. It would be an LED display on the wall, just like we have today, replacing outdated equipment. In terms of cost, that was a question. Well, that was one of the items we wanted to do with phase two, is come up with some estimated costs. And I do want to point out that they're estimated costs. The most expensive option would be the boardroom. The direct view LED in the boardroom, that would be approximately, and I want to emphasize this, approximately $461,000 to replace the screen and all the equipment, the audio, the microphone, all the equipment in the boardroom. If we were to take the video wall approach, the boardroom would be about $45,000 less, about $417,000. And if we were to do a projector in there, it would be $377,000. I was incorrect on the table in my staff report. It would be $377,000. With the additions of C2 and C3, we're looking at, if we went the direct view LEDs, $578,000, including the two conference rooms. The video wall would be about $534,000, so about $34,000 less. And the projector would be about $494,000. However, from a staff recommendation and from a recommendation for Waves, we continue to propose moving forward with a direct view LED in the boardroom, and that's because it would provide one bright screen for display in the board. We wouldn't have to worry about lighting or brightness. There's also not one single point of failure like there would be with a projection system. I'm not sure how well a projection system would work in that room without having to turn down lights. The board will recall that we never have to turn down lights in the boardroom for presentations. And most likely the biggest annoyance are just the bezel lines on the screen, especially when Randy shows a spreadsheet up there and it's up there with lines from the spreadsheet lines. I will point out too, one of the hidden costs is the annual maintenance to support one of these systems. In the past, we have budgeted and paid about $25,000 a year for support of these systems, this type of system. That also guarantees a quick turnaround and guaranteed we have a failure whenever there's a board meeting or there's some big meeting that's going to happen in one of these rooms. So we'd like to have a quick turnaround, and it's well worth the money. The committee, and I think Director Sheldon had asked us to look into some chambers of commerce to see what they're doing, just to get a perspective, a less expensive perspective. We did reach out to Fountain Valley Chamber of Commerce, who do not have any conference rooms. They do share rooms with Fountain Valley Unified School District. And basically they have a PC with a projector. We looked to talk to the city Chamber of Commerce with Brea, who same thing, they have PCs, got a computer going to a TV screen, and same with North Orange County Chamber of Commerce. But if you look at larger agencies, you look at cities, they have, either they have large projection systems or now they're moving to these either LED wall panels or direct view LED. So based on the recommendation from WAVES and based on staff's recommendation, the recommended action here would be to agendize for the August 21st board meeting, direct staff to develop a request for proposal for an audiovisual contractor to replace the audiovisual systems in the boardroom to include the direct view LED option, video wall, and to include C2 and C3 conference rooms. And with that recommendation, staff would come back to the board with the RFP before and to get approval to issue the RFP. That concludes my reports.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Any questions for Bruce?
I had a question. How much is MODOC contributing a portion?
MODOC's contribution, thank you for asking that. I meant to mention it. MODOC's contribution is approximately 33%.
33%.
I have also been working with the MODOC staff. They've been involved in meetings. Mary Beth, who's our district secretary, and Dave Anderson, who's our IT person, have been involved. I'm sharing all this information with them. And right now we're planning that I will go and give a presentation to the October Joint Planning Committee, which I would expect to have an RFP drafted by then.
And then do they have a preferred alternative, or would they know at that meeting what they think?
Well, the one comment I got from a director when I gave a presentation as one of the joint planning was, whatever option you take, please no lines on the screen. So, and working with staff, they're supportive of whatever option we decide to take.
Got it. And then any of the other outside agencies interested in contributing, or would that just kind of be more of a hindrance to them if we have
Which
agency? Oh, it just said in the staff report that several other outside agencies.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Is ASDOC? Do they do?
Yes, they do. We also, and I know there's a meeting planned in December. The Regional Water Quality Board is going to have one of their regional meetings in the boardroom. So we do get those kind of meetings on occasion. They don't contribute to the cost of
AI. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. We also have over 100 boards that meet in there. There's just a lot of meetings. We've developed redundant internet because we rely so much on having to do doing meetings in there. I mean, we're really trying to bring it up to continue to support these type of meetings. And
I get it. And then on the C2, C3, the dollar amounts are the exact same regardless.
They are because of the similar, they're the same configuration.
Right. And then could these be phased, or would that change the dollar amount if we did, say we did only C2 and then we said, maybe C3. C3 is the other one that we've met.
That's correct.
After our meeting yesterday.
Yes. And that actually, I'm glad you brought that up too. In talking about MODOC and MODOC's cost share, that's only for boardroom and C3. Those are shared facilities. C2 is completely on OCWD. I think that's a good point. But to answer your question, yes, we could phase it. That's one option.
And it wouldn't change the price, or would it change it because they want to do it all at once?
Well, these are just estimates. We have to go out to RFP to see what it would cost. But what I would do is I would have them as options. So it would be like a menu item.
Got it.
The other alternative, too, would be, and depending on budget costs and what the board's pleasure is, I mean, we could even keep those really simple and just do, staff can just do them and do real simple implementation. Computer to screen. It just, all depends on the level of how we want to do it. Right now, everything's automated. We have, you can plug a laptop into here and project it on, have it on the screen. We can dim the lights from the control system. We can change the audio. We had a camera in here that was obsolete pretty quickly with Zoom, but a camera system in here where that you could control the system. The phone, you could control the system. We don't need that level. And this doesn't reflect that level. This is a much scaled down level, but we would have a control panel on the wall that we could dim the lights with. But I would bring that back as options as part of the RFP response, or as part of the RFP.
Right. Yeah, because on the C3, MoDoc probably uses that more for their meetings.
On occasion, yeah. Yes.
I've only been in there just to have lunch. So
I'm just curious how often that one gets used versus this one.
Right. But I mean, I'm sure there's other staff necessities required for it through just your day-to-day operations.
Right.
So I don't want to neglect that use as well. So I'm just curious on how that one got used. But that was it. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have one quick question.
Yes, please.
Did you check with SAPA at all? You know, we have a smaller main room on that, but they've recently updated, and especially the microphone system is especially good. And I just thought you might want to get that just as a cost comparison or as a possible source.
Yeah,
that's it.
And one of the and that's a good point. We can definitely check with SAPA. That's very good. In the boardroom, just from what we've noticed in meetings, a lot of times the board may engage someone in the audience, and you can't hear them in Zoom or because there's no microphone. So one of the we want to have some ambient mics in the ceiling that can be turned on and off, but that can pick up a discussion.
SAPA has a bar in the center of the ceiling that picks up very well, and I don't know if it would require two of those or something.
Yeah. Okay, but that's good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Wagon, and Whitaker for your input. Yeah, this is, you know, we're talking about audio visual, and we always tend to just focus in on the visual, but that's a very good point that audio is very important because as we're having this meeting, I'm struggling a little bit to hear from Mr. Whitaker. I mean, Mr. Dozier.
Dozier.
You're sitting way in the back, and
I'm right under a microphone.
I mean, especially
here. he's wearing a mask too.
I am wearing a mask.
Okay, got it. Yeah, and I'm sorry, Eric, did you have some other comments?
Oh, I just was going to add on to the volume. You know, it would be nice to have it so that when the meeting goes live, then you can hear us. But like up to that meeting, sometimes we like to just talk about like, oh, hey, how's your wife doing or how's your life going or something. And the public doesn't need to hear that prior to the meeting started, but I think maybe they are. So, you know, having that, you know, start at 12 or start at 5:30, then people can hear us talk. But like before then, it'd be nice to have that.
No hot mic.
Right. Yeah. System that has that hot mic.
Delay. And typically the district secretary will unmute the mic right when the meeting starts, but typically.
And Just maybe there's an additional security That's
thank you. That would be nice to have. So, Bruce, I have a question for you, or Bruce Dozier, two Bruces. So are consultant Waves, are they able to bid on this contract as well? I know they help us, you know, figure out the specs and price things out.
Yes, they are. Okay. Yes, they are. We did. That was part of their agreement to, in order to pull it together, that they'd be allowed to bid on it as well.
Okay, thank you. And so what we have in front of us is to set a budget of $579,000 to go out with an RFP and seek qualified bidders, right?
Well, what staff is recommending right now is just to direct staff to develop the RFP. Not to issue it. Staff would come back and request authorization to issue it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions or comments for the staff? Okay, if not, I would entertain a motion.
I'll second.
I was waiting for the mayor.
See, we need a better microphone. So it sounded like we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Mezqua.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Wigand.
Yes.
And motion carries 5-0.
Okay, thank you. Are we ready to go back to item number 8?
Yes, we are.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Randy will tee this up. Thanks, John. So the district has a retiree medical insurance benefit plan. We'll call it OPEB, or post-employment benefits other than pension. And government accounting standards require that a actuarial valuation completed by a certified actuary is completed every 2 years. And then in the off year, a roll forward with certain information updated. Well, this year we needed a complete valuation done, and our actuary, Doug Pryor, is online, and he'll be sharing a presentation of his valuation. And Doug, if you want to share your screen.
Thanks, Randy. Let me do that. Apologies for being late. Some reason I had it on my calendar as 1 o'clock. So at any rate, good to be here. Hopefully I've shared the PowerPoint. I think you have the full report in your packet. This is the June 30, 23 valuation. As Randy mentioned, they're required to be done every 2 years. Really the purpose of this report is to sort of review the overall plan funded status, as well as make recommended contributions for this year and next year. Kind of reminder on the benefit. So to get this benefit, employee would need to work for 12 years with the district and retire up at or after age 55. There have been various caps historically on the amount of the premium that the district will pay for retirees. Effective January of this year, it really kind of boiled down to full premium paid for single coverage and general 95% of the dual or family premium paid by the district. And you kind of have, in general, it's a lifetime benefit for those hired before 2009. For those hired after, this is a really a benefit payable to age 65 at Medicare eligibility. That's the basic benefit. There's also, and I don't want to dig too far into the weeds here, but the benefit I just described is what might be referred to as a cash benefit. The retirees also benefit from how the premiums are arranged. And this, just real briefly, is summarized what's known as the implicit subsidy. The idea here is that if you look across the x-axis here at age, the blue line is overall a representation of the cost of providing medical coverage at the various ages. The same premium, the green line, is charged regardless of age. So what happens is the carrier will set the rate so that overall they collect enough premium to provide the services, and they have that same premium. But they know that the age 64-year-old is typically going to cost a lot more than the 35-year-old. And so there's what's known as implicit subsidy, which simply means that you look at the active premium, by and large, paid by the district, that's larger than the cost of providing the medical coverage to, in this example, the 35-year-old. And so that difference there is really implied to be a subsidy that's paid towards a retiree. So it's just, I think we could back away from the details of this, but just recognize that in general, the fact that the retiree premium is based on an overall blended premium for actives and retirees means that there is a benefit to the retirees, and that's included in the required by actuarial standards of practice to be included in the valuations. Real briefly, historical participant information on this slide. Since the 2021 valuation, really a pretty steady, flat 216, same number of employees. You can see the breakout of the tier one and tier two. So you're now at the point where you have actually more tier two than tier one employees as of June 30 of 23. Retiree count continued to increase over the last 5 years or so, and 102 benefiting at this point in time, or this point in time, meaning, I'm sorry, the valuation date, June 30 of 2023. Real briefly on assumptions, there are a lot of assumptions built into the projections we do, and we'll cover those a little bit more when we get to some of the results. But overall, the trust, you're you're pre-funding with is the PARS balance fund, which is an OPEB trust. The money that's in there can only be used to either pay benefits to retirees or reimburse the district for benefits that were paid by the district to retirees. So it's what's known as irrevocable trust. We do an analysis based on survey of investment advisors as to what they would peg the long-term rate of return to be, and that's what's known as a discount rate. And we're maintaining that at 5.75%. And then one other kind of detail here is that to sort of stabilize the contributions over time, rather than building in the actual market value of assets, what we're doing is using a smooth actual value of assets. And the idea there is, it's sort of depicted in this chart here. You can see going back to actual fiscal year 2010, the annual rate of return on assets, which are depicted here by the it's hard to see the triangular line, but the solid line, then the return on actual value of assets, it would credit it as the dashed line with the square markers. Okay, so you can see in the last several years, at least, the great volatility you've seen, as many of us have seen, with investments, and that's the returns on the market value. The dashed line with the square marker is the return credited on actual value. So you can see the volatility of the market value returns and the sort of stabilization going on with actual value of assets to determine contributions that will come to a little later. So what are the basic results of this valuation? These numbers are in thousands of dollars. The plan continues to be in good financial shape. June 30, 21, you had a accrued liability about $24.2 million. That grew to $27.8 million in the 2023 valuation. Assets, though, grew at a quicker pace from $24.4 to $28.3. So overall, you have assets in excess of the accrued liability, or what might be termed an overfunded liability. $257,000 in 21, that grew to $583,000 in June 30, 2023. If you look at this in terms of what's the ratio of your assets to that accrued liability, you can see the last two valuations, you're right around 101, 102%. There is, of course, quite a bit of difference at times with the market value, so we like to keep that in mind. For this valuation, you're 102% funded on an actual value of asset basis, market value of asset a little lower, but still right near 100, still in solid shape. You will see that there's kind of the volatility. If you look back to 2021, you were 101% funded on actual value basis, but 114 on market value basis due to that exceptional return in 2021. In terms of what happened between the two valuations, it's summarized here in this table. What you have is the overfunded liability, June 30, 21, at $257,000. If everything was expected, you would have been at about $860,000 overfunded. You see below are a number of changes that came in with the current valuation. So you ended up being not as well overfunded June 30, 23 as we would have expected to be about $860,000 overfunded instead of $583,000. The difference is that $277,000. As you can see, there's some pretty big changes here in various directions. But keep in mind, the liability, although this number, the $257,000 unfunded liability started with, might be relatively small, you have about 24 to 27 million in liability and assets, and those are going to generate kind of big fluctuations with respect to this unfunded liability. So I don't know if you want me to go into detail, but we have the various items listed out here. Premiums, I'll just kind of run through a few of the bigger ticket items. Premiums went up by less than expected, about $1 million. This slide also in thousands of dollars. We changed our projection of how much we expect premiums to increase in the future. That actually increased your liability about $1.3 million. You also have contributions that exceeded that ADC over the two-year period. That was $1.5 million, basically, reduction in that or increase in the surplus that you're running. And you have poor investment returns. That is about $500,000. So I can go into more detail if you have questions on the specifics, but this is kind of the reconciliation of how we get from where we were a couple of years ago to where we are today at the $583,000 surplus funded position. If you look at this historically, back to 2015, the height of each bar is the actuarial accrued liability, which is kind of, your target asset value. The blue is the liability for retirees, and the green is the liability for actives. And then what you have here are the assets. Market value of assets was used through the 2019 study, and then the market value of assets came in the 2021 study, I believe. So you can kind of see both assets as well as the funded ratio. Variations over the years, but you can see a ton of improvement, certainly in the last two valuations to get to where you are in 21 and 23 of about 101, 102% funded in each of those valuations. Let's talk a little bit, just big picture about how the trust is working. I kind of touched on this, but you have district fund or assets. And the idea is to send money off to the trust, and then that trust then pays the retirees. Now, that's, the basics of the trust, but you also have, the district paying retirees directly their premiums and then getting reimbursed the black lines here, right? So the left side here, district assets are, district assets. The right side here, whether it's the OPEB trust or retirees, is not a district asset, right? So when you move from district money over to the right-hand side, it's basically a payment towards this OPEB liability, whichever circle it goes to. So with respect to the actual determined contribution, here are the key results. Each valuation covers two fiscal years. So if you look at the 21 valuation, what you see is that covered through last year. The actual determined contribution for last year was $640,000. As we come to the first year of the 23 valuation, a bit of an uptick to $684,000. There's two components of that sort of determined contribution. You have this normal cost, which is the value of benefits accruing or being earned by active employees. And then you have a payment on that. Typically it would be a payment, but you're overfunded, so you get a credit for that excess funding, and you're recognizing that over a 18-year period. So you have an offset to this ongoing cost of $730,000, which is to recognize the fact that you are surplus on this plan. There's also administrative expenses built in here too, but the primary drivers, of course, are the normal cost of benefits accruing for employees, with an offset in this case for the surplus funding, gets you to $684,000 actuarial determined contribution for the year. All this information, of course, is for the aggregate plan. If you look at this with respect to your two tiers, there's a couple things going on here. One is that tier two benefit is, as I mentioned on that first slide, is only payable to 65. So the value of that benefit is much lower than the tier one benefit, which is payable for the retiree and spouse lifetime. The other issue is that, people hired since 2009 and have left service have kind of accrued, gotten a lot further away from retirement. So what you see here is, the accrued liability for tier one is, 95% of the liability you're looking at. You only have 5% of the liability for the tier two at this point, even though that tier two was put in over 10 years ago. If you look at the cost of this per employees, I mentioned the normal cost is that value of benefits accruing for active employees. Look at the 24-25 normal cost. You know, you can see, you can't see it in the total, $526,000 normal cost for tier one, $204,000 for tier two. But if you look at that per employee, you can see the drastic difference in the savings. Long-term, you'll see with the tier two, which is showing that normal cost per employee for that tier one lifetime benefit is about $5,400 per employee. It's about a third of that for the tier two employees at $1,700 per employee. So that's kind of, you know, that's going to help as more and more tier two people come in. You can see this difference in that sort of measure of the cost is going to start coming through and being seen in your numbers. And I wanted to end with a projection to which includes the impact of that lower tier two cost. And what this is showing is a 30-year projection. And what we have here is the purple bar here is the normal cost. Now, keep in mind, we started at fiscal year 24, and that was covered by the previous study. So you kind of have a bump up here. The change from the first two data points is due to the change in the valuations. But the rest of the projection is all based on the June 30, 23 valuation. You have the normal cost up here. What you see down here on the blue bars is that actual determined contribution. So that difference is that credit for the overfunding. So a number of things are going to change over the next 30 years. It's not as though we're suggesting that you can, you know, budget for that this is be exactly where you're going to be in fiscal year 44, but it illustrates how things are projected to play out in the future. And what it shows you is you're expected to have kind of credit for that overfunding extending quite a long period of time until almost this is basically the 18 years out, right? At 18 years out, then you're going to have the purple line be equal to your total contribution. Basically, you will have run out of the overfunding credits at that point in time. So that's kind of, you know, long term where we see things going. It was really kind of the last slide I had that I wanted to touch on. Again, this is a summary of the full report, which I'm going to get in the packet. So at this point, I'd love to open up, see if there's any questions at this point.
Okay, thank you, Doug. Does anyone in the committee have questions or comments for Doug?
Mr. Chair, I have a comment.
Yes, please, Director Whitaker.
Yes, it certainly looks like we're in a pretty comfortable position at present, and I'm very pleased to see that the discount rate is realistic, certainly more realistic than CalPERS. And I appreciate the multi-year look that we're getting on this as far as the smoothing over that long a span. So, yeah, very good report. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Director Whitaker. Anyone else? Yeah, no, Doug, thank you very much. And this is... yeah, we continue to receive good news. This is excellent information. It's good to know that we smooth things out over the years, so we don't have to suffer from that fluctuation of what we're seeing in the markets. And yeah. So the last slides you're showing here is that across the next 18 years that we're gonna continue to tap into the credit that we have, right? And
right. And so your cash, your OPEB cost is really the blue bars, right? And so these fluctuations in these years are due to the asset smoothing and recognizing over 5-year period some of the gains and losses. But after that, you can see for a long point in time, you're expected to have about a $600,000 annual cost for the OPEB benefits.
Cost containment for two decades.
But this is going to adjust every 2 years, right? It may.
That's right.
But at this point, this is the projection. Got it.
Exactly.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much. And I think we have a recommendation. If there is no other questions or comments for Mr. Pryor, thank you very much. And we have a the recommendation is to agendize for the August 21st board meeting. Receive and file. May I have a motion?
So moved.
And I'll second Director Whitaker's motion. Let's have a roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Hey, thank you. And thank you again, Doug. Let's go on to item number 10, I believe, is Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. It's Randy, right?
Yes. So this is the 16th year in a row. The district submits its annual consolidated financial report to the GFOA for the Certificate of Achievement Award. And we have received it for the fiscal year ending 2023. And kudos to staff, Melissa and her staff, for all the work they do to achieve this award.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Randy. And thank your staff for your great work. I think the best hire that we have recommended by Director Nelson was you. It's really worked out. And thank you. Your work really demonstrates, in all the awards and then, day-to-day activities that you do. Really appreciate it. Anyone have comments for Randy? Okay. Well, thank you again, Randy, for your excellent work. And what have we got? Okay, number 11 is the monthly cash disbursements report.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that information is contained in the packet.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, General Manager Kennedy. So I would direct that we... point of clarification, do we need to have, can number A be on a consent or it has to go to the full board?
Yeah, it can be on consent.
Okay, good then. And I would direct that items 1 through 9, one through nine to be listed in the consent calendar for the August 21st board meeting. Thank you. Any directors' announcements or reports? General Manager?
Just two quick things. I believe there's an ad hoc meeting with the auditor and a couple of the directors right after this meeting. And then I wanted to just report to make you aware I'll be out Friday and Monday. So.
Okay, thank you. And do we stay on with the same Zoom link or is it a separate one?
It's a separate Zoom link.
It's a separate, okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much. We're adjourned. Have a great day. Thank you, everybody.